It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
It was a startling revelation that was unveiled today. The chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, Devin Nunes, used evidence to help back up the president's claim that he was wiretapped through a secret visit that he made to the White House last week.
It's unclear whether the White House knew House Intelligence Chairman Devin Nunes was at the White House complex the day before he revealed Trump transition officials had been swept up an intelligence gathering. Nunes had been viewing classified documents in a secure facility at the National Security Council. In a statement, Nunes' spokesman said, quote, Chairman Nunes met with his source at the White House grounds in order to have proximity to a secure location where he could view the information provided by the source. The information comprised executive branch documents that have not been provided to Congress. Because of classification rules, the source could not simply put the documents in a backpack and walk them over to the House Intelligence Committee space. Nunes says his source was an intelligence official, not a White House staffer, and that the information was contained on the executive branch computer system. The White House dismissed any notion that what Nunes did was unusual or improper.
We've asked both of these entities, both the House and the Senate Intelligence Committees, to undertake this review. So it is partially at our request that they're looking into this. He has said, from my understanding on the record, that he did not meet with White House staff.
Democrats had a different take. The ranking member of the Senate Intelligence Committee called Nunes sleuthing suspicious. The Senate Minority Leader proclaimed he has to go.
If Speaker Ryan wants the House to have a credible investigation, he needs to replace Chairman Nunes.
All right, so says Chuck Schumer, Sandy Rios with you, John Roberts doing what he's been doing, and that is, the fact is, Devin Nunes has found information that might link the former president of the United States with surveilling a candidate of the opposing party. That's the story here. But no, the story is that Devin Nunes went to the White House. You know, the White House is very big. It's not just the place where the president lives. There's an executive office building with hundreds of people working. So Nunes says the only secure place that I can view this information from the whistleblower, because it can't be shared. It has a separate server in the White House for the executive branch, can't be shared on Capitol Hill. It's not, for one thing, secure, and also they don't connect. So he goes to the White House complex, and he observes this information, and that's all they can talk about. He went to the White House, so that must mean what? It means that, Nunes went to the White House to observe these, to read these email, to check in. I said email. I don't know what it is. I'm assuming it's email communication. It is amazing what they do to us, the news media outlets. Now they're focusing on Devin Nunes, and it's just, he's the head of the House Intelligence Committee, for heaven's sake. He has every right to do what he just did. Someone should be. Thank God he is. But they want to make something of it. In fact, what? John used the word sleuthing. Devin Nunes is sleuthing. He's not sleuthing. That's his job. Thank God he's doing his job wherever he has to go to read that information. The story is that someone, it looks like someone in the executive branch, may have asked for and gotten the surveillance of a candidate for president during an election. That's illegal. That's Watergate on steroids. And so we're going to talk about that. Tony Schaefer, Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, is joining us at 8:20 this morning, Eastern Standard Time. And we'll talk about that with Tony. Today, by the way, Devin Nunes was supposed to have had a hearing behind closed doors with the former head of Defense Intelligence, Clapper, and Brennan, and the head of the FBI. And guess what? They decided not to come. And we'll talk to Tony about that, too, and just find out what he thinks. And by the way, the president was tweeting this morning. He said, why isn't the House Intelligence Committee looking into Bill and Hillary's The Bill and Hillary deal that allowed big uranium to go to Russia. The Russian speech, for which Bill Clinton was paid hundreds of thousands of dollars. Money to Bill, the Hillary-Russian reset, praise of Russia by Hillary, or Podesta, Russian company. Trump-Russia story is a hoax. So that's what Donald Trump tweeted this morning. Thank goodness that he does. Otherwise, how are people going to know? And so, by the way, this morning, the son-in-law, Jared Kushner of Donald Trump is going before the Senate Intelligence Committee to answer questions about his conversations with the Russians. It's really just, it really is ridiculous. If there was something there, and I guess we shouldn't, if we had an honest inquiry, I'm all in favor of that. But because I know this is a witch hunt, and if they find anything, then they want to find something else and something. Think of it this way. If someone has a preconceived notion about your guilt or innocence on something, almost nothing you say can exonerate you. Because everything, they see everything you say indicates guilt to them. We're all that way with our personal relationships. And of course, you have a group of Democrats and people on the left who want to destroy you. So it won't matter how honest, how much you raise your hand and swear on a Bible, doesn't matter. Because they have already condemned you for their own purposes, their political purposes. So it's getting interesting. Let me just say before I get into more news, it was wonderful to be in Dallas over the weekend. It was wonderful to be at First Baptist Church and to speak in the evening for their subgroup on religious freedom. It was just wonderful to see so many of you who drove so far to come and listen. What an honor. And a pleasure and a privilege. And so I just want to thank you. It's fun for me to get out and meet listeners face to face because sometimes plugging away, I forget there are actually people listening. I don't forget. Every time I sit at this mic, I know I have a responsibility to be faithful, to bring you the best information as honestly as I possibly can, to look at the sources and try to deliver trustworthy things to you. So to see you responding and appreciating and learning, I think that's one of the things that encourages me the most is when I meet with listeners, I'm just so gratified. It's like a teacher whose pupils, you know, do well on the exams. And you go, wow, I'm communicating and they are understanding. And now they're teaching me. And so just thanks for the blessing of coming on Sunday night, and thanks for the great time that we had, and hopefully I'll be around in other places in the country talking, and we can get to know each other from these other states. By the way, we just added a station in Jacksonville, Florida, just a couple of weeks ago, so there the network is growing and growing, and so who knows where we'll show up next. All right, well, the healthcare issue is a great concern to me, I have to tell you, and so Mike Emanuel brought kind of a one of the reasons is of great concern are the obvious reasons, because healthcare is chaos. People are still suffering. No matter what the political machinations on Capitol Hill are, the truth is people are still strapped with this terrible, terrible healthcare system as a result of the chaos brought about by the Democrats and by President Obama, who don't care. They want to control. It's a sixth of our economy. And so everyone forced to buy or punished with taxes, and people who are have means, middle class mostly, are required to pay exorbitant amounts in order to bring on to the roll people who would normally be able to buy it. So we're buying insurance for people who can't afford it, and it's sinking the middle class. They can't pay their deductibles, but a lot of people on the poor end of the spectrum are students and young people. It's good they don't have to have much medical care, and they get it for next to nothing with great tax breaks. It's, you know, a redistribution of wealth. But the problem is, of course, because so many insurance companies are backing out, in some states there's only like one left hanging on, the exchanges are not working, and people may be insured, but they can't find doctors and they can't get coverage. And many people that have coverage can't afford, they just have to pay everything out of pocket because the deductibles are so high. I don't need to explain that to you, do I? So we have a mess. And so it's a great interest to me how this thing is playing out. Yesterday, Mike Emanuel did a report on the House Freedom Caucus is getting the blame for this. The president tweeted out, Sunday morning early, something about, I hope they're happy. The Freedom Caucus says, I'm not reading his words, I'm doing this from memory. They've allowed Planned Parenthood to continue and Obamacare to live, or something to that effect, which is a tremendous slam. And as I understand it, Reince Priebus prompted him. That's who he's surrounded with right now in the White House, is Reince Priebus. Sean Spicer was part of Reince's team. And so he's hearing that the Freedom Caucus is all to blame about this. The Freedom Caucus, could I say, at the most would be 40 votes. And as I understand it, there were at least 100 members of the House of Representatives on the Republican side who were going to vote against this bill. So it is grossly exaggerated, if there is blame to be established, to say that it's the 40 members of the Freedom Caucus. I think the reason why Paul Ryan didn't bring it for a vote is he didn't. It wasn't just the Freedom Caucus. He lost 100 of his members because they realized it was a really bad bill. And the polls show only 17% of Americans supported this bill. And nevertheless, the Freedom Caucus is being blamed for this. And by the way, my understanding is that they're going to be called up this morning, called out, embarrassed, raked over the coals. And so I mentioned that to you just to ask you to pray for them. These are good men. They are really good men. Mark Meadows has been leading them. And, of course, all of our friends, Jim Jordan, I can't think of names because I'm just, but I will in a second. But they have worked so hard, and they are the ones really who have represented your interests. What the American people, thought they were getting when they supported Donald Trump was what the Freedom Caucus is supporting, and that is a free market plan, not another big government plan to provide insurance and coverage for every single person, no matter what. This is what we can't do. We cannot afford it. We need a free market plan. If you want to buy, you can buy. If you don't, you don't have to. You don't have to pay for every single service. You don't have to be 65 years old and pay for maternity care. There are problems with this bill. And so that's why 100 members on the Republican side weren't going to vote for it, not just the Freedom Caucus. Nevertheless, Reince Priebus, after the president tweeted what he did in the early morning hours blaming the Freedom Caucus, this is what Reince Priebus said on Fox News. This is Cut One.
I think the president's 100% correct, and he hits the bullseye. We can't be chasing the perfect all the time. I mean, sometimes you have to take the good and put it in your pocket and take the win. I think it's time for our folks to come together. And I also think it's time to potentially get a few moderate Democrats on board as well.
Yeah, so he was right. The president was right to blame the Freedom Caucus. You have to understand, Reince is very close to Paul Ryan. And the Freedom Caucus has really been the opposition party when it comes to raising the national debt, to really doing the things that we, those of us that are the grassroots, hundreds of thousands of people that came to Trump's rallies and supported him, are at one with the aims of the Freedom Caucus. There were so few of them. And these guys are taking a beating right now. So I'm asking you to pray for them even this morning. And I'm praying that God will make it really, that truth will become evident. They are defending themselves left and right as much as they can on television. But really, God has a way of revealing truth that just silences people. And that's what I'm praying for. Reince Priebus went on even to accuse them of this. Cut 12.
If you look at this bill and you look at what it provided, I mean, the tax relief, the largest entitlement reform in modern history, you look at the fact that we were almost to the point where we would be defunding Planned Parenthood, or we were to the point where we'd be defunding Planned Parenthood, the fact that some of these members took that and decided not to move forward with it, I think is a real shame. And I think the president's disappointed in a number of people that he thought were loyal to him that weren't. That all being said, I want people out there to understand that this president is not going to be a partisan president. This is a president that wants to provide, and you're right.
Okay,
he wants to
I'm
make sure that people
him.
Don't he, get
yeah,
left
so
behind.
So he's inferring that the people that voted against this bill, the Freedom Caucus, aren't loyal to the president. It's a loyalty test, and that they didn't want to defund Planned Parenthood. Could I just tell you that that's a ploy? That bill defunded Planned Parenthood for 1 year only. This is what the leadership does all the time. They use this, they beat their chests and talk about how terrible Planned Parenthood is, and they get elected on that, and then when it comes time to really defund it, they don't do anything. And so this was a ploy to make it sound as though they were defunding, but it was only for a year. Freedom Caucus knew that, and they knew this bill was insufficient. It was not what the people asked for or expected. And if it had passed, it would have been such a bad thing for Donald Trump. It would have been called Trump Care. And I'm just praying that at some point he will recognize that. There's a lot more to say about that. But I want to take a break, and Lieutenant Colonel Schaefer will be with us, because I want to talk about the Devin Nunes stuff and what's going on with that. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
From Samaritan's Purse and Franklin Graham comes Facing Darkness. In 2014, as the Ebola virus was devastating West Africa,
the numbers of new cases and deaths are still rising.
International relief organization Samaritan's Purse stepped up.
God has called us to care for the dying, to care for those that are suffering.
We can't say we're Samaritan's Purse and not help.
My phone rang. One of our doctors, Kent Brantley, as Ebola.
And then David looked at me and he said, you too have Ebola.
We're there to save life. We're there in your name. Why?
Despite the fact that things were out of control, we knew that God was in control.
God puts you in places and supplies the strength to deal with.
Jesus Christ didn't run. We run to the fire. We don't run away from it.
Facing Darkness, a true story of faith. In select cinemas for one night only, Thursday, March 30th. For theaters and tickets, go to facingdarknessmovie.com. That's facingdarknessmovie.com.
American Family Radio, impacting America.
Yes, my name is Marilyn from Oklahoma, and I recently ran for state representative here in the state of Oklahoma. I had a feeling or a calling that God wanted me to do that after having been a listener of Sandy Rios and Tony Perkins. They both really made an impression on my heart, and I felt that God was calling me to run, and I did. And although I lost, I felt like I was obedient to his call, and I'm not going to give up. I'm going to keep trying to fight for this state and for this country. Thank you very much for what y'all do.
Your partnership with American Family Radio keeps your family informed on the issues of the day. Join us for our 3-day share-a-thon beginning April 4th.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Caitlin Bird. I'm a nursing major and I'm a junior. The School of Nursing here at TMU, it's different than any other, you know, university or college out there. Every time we come into class, no matter which nursing professor it is, we always begin in devotion and prayer, and we become a family. They actually allow the students to get up and do devotion and prayer. We pray with each other and for each other, and that's just what sets us apart from any other school of nursing out there.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
Fashionistas are freaking out after United Airlines banned two girls from boarding a flight because they were wearing leggings. Among those defending the young ladies, model Chrissy Teigen. She announced via Twitter she's flown United without wearing any pants at all. A grown woman just telling the world she travels pantsless. We'll need to see that in first class or coach. Ms. Teigen has exposed a much bigger issue across the fruited plain. Folks just don't know how to dress appropriately in public. In the golden age of travel, passengers would board jetliners dressed in their Sunday going-to-church clothes. But these days, sweet mercy, some of these people dress like they're a bunch of Vegas showgirls. I will concede you have a constitutional right to dress like a Vegas showgirl, but the issue is whether your mama would want you to. Put some pants on, America! I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
U.S. defense officials tell Fox two companies from the 82nd Airborne Division based at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, some 200 troops in all, will be departing soon for the ISIS fight in Mosul. This comes days after the USS George H.W. Bush entered the Persian Gulf to begin airstrikes against ISIS in Iraq and Syria. The Pentagon is also ramping up operations against terrorist groups around the world, with increasing focus on the African continent. U.S. officials tell Fox the Department of Homeland Security's recent ban on electronic devices larger than cell phones on flights to the United States from some Muslim nations was imposed in part because a laptop was used to bomb this Somali airliner last year. Al-Shabaab, Al-Qaeda's affiliate in Somalia, claimed responsibility for the attack. And the top U.S. general for Africa says the terror group could strike again in the future.
I think Al-Shabaab has demonstrated they could do this in the past, so I think it's something that we just continue to watch and have to stay after.
This increasing terrorist threat from Al-Shabaab is one of the reasons General Waldhauser recently asked the new administration for greater authority to strike Al-Qaeda's third-largest affiliate on his own terms.
I think the combatant commanders, myself included, are more than capable of making judgments and determinations on some of these targets, and I'm well capable, and we are all well capable of making those calls.
General Waldhauser recently told Congress Al-Shabaab regained territory last year and today continues to carry out attacks on U.S.-backed African forces and Western hotels in the capital, Mogadishu. 3,000 miles north of Somalia, ISIS remains a nagging problem with up to 200 fighters regrouping in southern Libya, requiring the continued presence of U.S. Special Operations Forces on the ground to help with future airstrikes.
ISIS has not left. Keep a presence on the ground because you have to have that there. And we're going to develop intelligence and take out targets when they arise.
In January, a pair of Air Force B-2 bombers flew a 30-hour round-trip mission from Missouri to Libya to destroy two ISIS training camps following hundreds of drone strikes against the terrorist group in the Libyan coastal city of Sirte since August.
All right, that was Lucas Tomlinson on Fox News. I mean, just an interesting update on what's going on. And you know that President Trump was saying they're going to eliminate ISIS, and the president of Iraq, in an interview with Chris Wallace on Sunday, said that he thought ISIS would be gone soon. Well, I'm going to ask our next guest about that, among other things, because Lieutenant Colonel Schaefer, Tony Schaefer, was a former intelligence officer. He won the Bronze Star with 30 years of field and operational experience. He worked with the Defense Intelligence Agency. He was a senior intelligence officer, and he wrote a book called Operation Dark Heart, Spycraft and Special Ops on the Front Lines of Afghanistan, and many, many other things. But I've asked him to join us this morning. Good morning, Tony. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Sandy. Thanks for having me. Good to be on.
I'm just really curious. You know, when you hear about our troops, more of them, now two companies going back into Mosul to fight ISIS, do you think that is a good plan or a bad plan? What do you think about that?
Well, it's within the context of the larger campaign to go and get rid of ISIS. And one of the things notable, and I think it's appropriate, is that President Trump has authorized a more aggressive use of troops within that context. We have to understand that ISIS is not going to go away, and the policies and procedures that President Obama had put in place was really not helping. It wasn't making it possible for us to defeat them. With that said, we have to have a global approach. I think the run-up story talking about Africa is very accurate. I know for a fact that we've had interest in going more deeply into Africa to do some of the things to get rid of Al-Shabaab and other groups, and it's just necessary right now. I'm not saying we should be deploying troops willy-nilly all over the world. I think we know where people are at, the ISIS folks are, and I think we want to go in and get them. We have to, and Sandy, long term, we have to find a way to bring stability to those regions. And you can't do that through the barrel of a gun. You have to bring in people who can help develop things, economic development, religious freedoms, which have to be, you know, kind of helped along. And so we need to follow up after the military action with some sort of assistance, some sort of ability to bring civil order to the region. And it's going to take time to do that.
You know, I always get a little nervous when it's just a few troops, you know, a few, whatever, small groups. Because of the nature of the enemy, I guess the thing I fear the most, Tony, is just sending them in and to be slaughtered, potentially slaughtered. Just think of what, you know, they would do to an American who was captured. That's why it seems like we should go in and really go in and force and protect our own or not, as a civilian. You know, I'm not a military person, but that's my reaction to that. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, this is where I think we've learned we have to be careful how we deploy large land armies. If we start becoming too large, we become the target, and we become the issue. And I think this is where General Dunford has been doing a good job of what we call capacity building, partnership building, where we help those units, those local militaries, do their own work. One of the things we're proposing right now, the London Center for Policy Research think tank I'm part of, is an Arab NATO. We should not be sending our troops over constantly to defend others. They should defend themselves. We have good allies in the region, and frankly, Sandy, we've trained every Arab military force in the region. We send their folks to our academies. So why don't we then organize them to be more effective? And I think that's what General Dunford's been doing. That's the path forward we need to do. I just don't see the need to have our troops doing all the heavy lifting. And I think that's why you see that limited number going over now, because the idea is we should not be the ones fighting. We should be the ones helping others fight. I think that's why you see this lower number of folks than we would normally have in this. And I think that's where we should go in the future. Again, Sandy, it's not our job to defend, Jordan. I think we should do everything we can to help Jordan defend himself. But if we can help them create an alliance with Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, and all those other nations, and then let them do their own fighting, I think that's the best path forward.
Well, we need a good path forward, that's for sure. It does seem like there's momentum, and I'm grateful for that. We've got to do something. We can't just be standing by because of the international danger. I want to pivot to something else, which is what I told you I wanted to talk about. This whole thing with Devin Nunes, the head of the Intelligence Committee for the House, this whole dust-up about suddenly it's terrible that he went to the White House to look at files or email, whatever it was, in the executive branch because he couldn't view it elsewhere. Now, that is the source of the story. But, Lieutenant Colonel, what do you know about this story and what he may have? Anything?
Well, he's got whistleblowers who have come forward. I think we have to look at this in two parts. First, the fact now that I'm sure, based on what I've been told, that he does have evidence. The question becomes, how do we use that evidence without giving up sensitive sources and methods? We don't want to tell people how we spy. And the other thing notable, and I've been a whistleblower. I know exactly how the game is played. The executive branch will not give the legislative branch certain information. It just won't. I've known this for a while. And when I had to testify, I had to tell Congress where to look for things. And I had some good Republican congressmen, Congressman Kurt Weldon, some others trying to help out. And it took work to track the information down. And so I don't believe his visit to the executive branch, and he's made it very clear it wasn't to meet with the president or his staff. I believe that. He was trying to get information that's normally not shared with Congress. So it's not surprising to me that he had to go look at information that's controlled by the executive branch. And the executive branch has been very bad about hiding stuff. So what I believe he was shown was the specific information that they were looking for in a database relating to NSA and the dissemination. So they have that now. And now the question becomes, how do they work to talk to the American people about it without giving up sensitive sources and methods? And more importantly, I believe that there's a very quiet but concerted investigation going after whose name. You don't want those who are guilty to get away. So I think the other part of this, which the press has not really detected much of, is that they know the names now. I think it's a matter of the names, that is, of those who authorized the unmasking. I think that's who they're now quietly trying to pursue, is how do they put together an investigation to go after them. So.
Well, it's interesting how, of course, all the smoke and mirrors is around Devin Nunes. Like, he's evidently done something terrible here, and a total ignoring of the root of what's going on here. Precisely.
Well, I've been fascinated by that. I was on a couple of shows last night, and I was on with one of the lapdog Democrats, and it's like it's always back to Russia, or it's always back to the issue of how did they get the information. You know, it's totally insane. They're refusing to look at the fact, Sandy, that someone in the executive branch under President Obama authorized felony-level violations of the law to unmask U.S. citizen information and then further disseminate that to a large group of people within the administration for political purposes. Mm-hmm. Sandy, they used the heavy-duty tools and capabilities of a nation-state against what they considered a political enemy. This is no small issue. This is what makes us, and I've said this before, this is Soviet-level wrongdoing. This is like the old Soviet Union. It's totally insane.
It is insane, and I try to explain it and put it in context. It's like a Watergate on steroids. Watergate was nothing compared to this. These are burglars who went into the DNC to try to find information, broke into their headquarters. This would be Again, as you said, turning the full force of intelligence capabilities on a private citizen, if Donald Trump was the object and his campaign. This is really every bit as serious, more serious really than Watergate, if it's true.
Right.
All right, so if it's in, okay, I'm speculating here. If it's in the executive branch only and the computers, of course, don't share information, the systems are separate, so they don't share information.
Yes.
I'm assuming it's someone in the executive branch. It is either, we could name names, but let's just, it's a staffer, it's an advisor, or even it could be the president himself. But I don't know what else we would conclude, the fact that it's in the executive branch offices.
No, I think, again, let me be clear on this, because this is a very complex puzzle. There's certain information that's been collected by the intelligence community that is just, it's so sensitive, it's either hand-carried. I mean, Sandy, I've run operations where it's not even on any computer network at all. It's basically air-gapped. We would type things about it on a laptop, take the laptop and print things off on a second printer, and then never once would that be networked. That's why the operations I ran have never been revealed. I mean, if you look at the WikiLeaks stuff and everything else, there's certain operations that we've never compromised. So what I'm saying is that there's probably that level of information that was attempted to be kept secret, that they kept things very separately from the larger, even top-secret databases. Because, an operation where, you know, I think Obama and his folks knew exactly what they were doing, and they knew exactly what would happen if they got caught. They're not stupid. They're arrogant, but not stupid. I think that's what happened here. I think their own arrogance, while they probably did a few things right security-wise, they probably followed some pretty tight security procedures to kind of keep this hidden. They did leak it to the New York Times, which meant that there was some trail. And then secondly, once you know there's a trail and access point, if you start looking around, you can find, you know, kind of go back to the original database. I think that's what happened here. I think that someone, a whistleblower, knew exactly where to look. It told the congressman where to look and brought him in. So I don't think necessarily that it means that any one of President Trump, him or his individuals, were the ones targeted. I think this data just shows that the Obama folks were up to no good to a level, as you mentioned, an order of magnitude worse than Watergate.
Tony, let me say, can we just, I'm going to take you with your permission 5 minutes longer. Is that all right with you?
Sure, that's fine, sure.
Okay, and Jeff, let's make a little bit later break here. Tony, there was supposed to be a hearing this morning with Nunez, and it was going to be the head of the, I think it was Clapper, former Defense Intelligence, and Brennan, and the FBI director. And they blew Nunez off. They're not coming. It was a behind-closed-door hearing. What do you know about that?
Well, again, it goes back to the level now of where this is at. I think both the director of NSA and the director of FBI are now confronted with a very severe fact that they either lied or failed to provide the information that Nunez is now aware of. So I think you've probably got some folks behind the scenes working hard to figure out an excuse, and I think this is no small issue as well. These guys could have showed up and just said, hey, this is false, this is nothing to see here, but they didn't. They're trying to get out of it because I think right now the gig is up. I think people on their end know that certain information has been provided to the two members of Congress, and there's no going back. So I think right now, to put it into the popular vernacular, they're trying to get their story straight.
And what does it mean that the NSA is being cooperative, but the FBI is not? What does that tell us?
Well, it means basically the NSA is the provider of data. Most of the information we're talking about, Sandy, really comes from NSA. FBI is a consumer of the data. FBI can help direct things, but NSA actually owns the means and methods of intercepting information, both phone calls and data. So they have to respond to the FBI when the FBI has a FISA request. FBI has very little. They do have some organic, some capability to do wiretapping and that sort of thing, but most of it's NSA. So NSA is probably the one providing the bulk of the data for, you know, what data they gave FBI. Only the FBI knows what they did with it. So I think that's where the FBI is not cooperating, is they're not talking about the authorities and how the information was used by them once they got it.
All right, so we have a lot of smoke here, tons of smoke. There's got to be some fire somewhere, and I guess the natural course of things would that there would be open, honest hearings on this, and that punishment would be meted out, whatever that means, firings, people held accountable. But Tony, this is a different atmosphere. I mean, it's just an unbelievable atmosphere where already the press, even John Roberts on Fox, loves reporting this. As he talked about Nunez sleuthing at the White House. You know, he says he misreports and misemphasizes, as do the rest of them. So you have an unfriendly, hostile media, and they're the ones that brought Nixon down during Watergate. They fanned the flames. This time we have a press that's totally, it's like bait and switch. Or look over here. Here it is over here. Here's the object. You know, when the real thing is not being discussed. So what do you think is going to happen with this?
Well, I think, look, I think it's a matter now of doing two things. You've got to collect data sufficient to confront the wrongdoers in a public way. I think we need to have public fears in this once we figure it out. Secondly, President Trump's going to have to do something probably no sitting president's ever done. He's going to have to look at indicting a former president, and I'm not joking about that. I think we're going to find that President Obama was at least knowledgeable of what was going on. This is, and so I stand by my words of, I think it was just a tick over 2 weeks ago when I first said, when President Trump tweeted that my belief was that President Obama had to be, you know, I've been involved in these sorts of operations, Sandy. I know that the White House is always notified. I cannot fathom that Obama did not know that this was going on. So I think basically you have to organize your investigation around those who committed the wrongdoing, and you got to consider the fact that I think Obama was directly involved, and you're going to have to consider something never been done before. It's going to be a, and I think I hope President Trump has the courage to do it. I really do.
When you were a whistleblower, what was your greatest fear? If you had been punished the way you thought your enemies would have punished you, what would that have looked like?
I did get punished. I'm constantly being audited by the IRS. You have to understand, Sandy, it doesn't go away. Once you break ranks, it doesn't get better. You break ranks for purposes of trying to tell the truth and trying to get things fixed. So you have to understand that there's no upside for a whistleblower. You basically are attacked because of telling the truth. So someone, whoever's doing this, is showing a great deal of courage because there's no upside. You're going to face a lot of backlash. And I think that's one of those misnomers that people don't understand that once you make a decision to go forward with something like this, you're kind of on your own. I think that's the biggest issue is you throw your career away. And, you know, I had to leave the government. I was still retired as lieutenant colonel, but I was also a GS-14 as a civilian intelligence officer. So it's a really difficult thing to do. You have to make a hard decision on what you're going to do, and so someone had to make that hard decision and tell the truth. And I really do admire the fact that they did.
Yeah, God bless you for doing that, Tony. I guess I don't really know your full story on that, and I apologize for that. But I find myself surrounded by whistleblowers. I mean, people who are patriots to the nines. So we have
That's
one.
That's why you do it, right?
We have one in this story. We don't know who it is, right. But do you sense that the dangers now are even greater than losing rank, losing a position? I mean, that's bad enough. IRS audits, that's terrible. But do you feel like the dangers are even greater, maybe?
I think it is. I mean, we're talking about the very control of this nation state called the United States, and I think that's where we have to understand that people – you know, people, look, whistleblowers have died before. I'm not trying to make this flip. It's just that we have to be very cautious. I'd like to believe that our side, the side of trying to tell the truth and get the word out there and protect the American people will win, but it's dangerous. It's very dangerous. And I think we were, with Hillary Clinton, I think had she won, we would have gone down a road we would have never come back for, and we would have lost our democracy. And again, I'm not trying to be dramatic here. I just think that would have happened. We would have lost our way. And frankly, those folks who tried to push Hillary on us are still trying to push. And they'd let nothing more than upend President Trump.
Well, I agree with everything you just said. You probably know that about absolutely. Whenever I get discouraged now, I think I always say, but Hillary Clinton could be president. And then it would be all out assault on those of us that believe in truth. It would be an assault. There'd be nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. And so for now, we're just chipping away the best way we can. Tony, you have to at least give us a short telling of what your whistleblowing was. I can't let you go without you doing that.
Oh, no. I was a part of something, an operation called Able Dangers. In fact, Lou Dobbs, I was on with Lou last night. Lou was one of the first folks in the media support getting it out. And we had identified, the intelligence community, the Defense Intelligence and Special Operations Command, identified two of the three cells which had conducted the 9/11 attacks before 9/11. We discovered them in 99 and 2000. And because of the Gorelick memo, Jimmy Gorelick being one of Bill Clinton's attorneys, there is a memo that prevented us from sharing good information from the intelligence side to the law enforcement side. And by Louis Freeh, the director of FBI, said after the fact, after the hearings in 2006, that had he received the information that we had in Able Danger prior to 9/11, he felt he could have stopped the attacks. Well, the politics of the time, the Clinton politics, got in the way of us sharing information. So what simply happened is that we had critical information regarding the fact that we had terrorist operational cells in the United States that we were prevented from sharing with the FBI. And so I had to testify to that and several other things relating to the fact that there was major 9/11 failures based on not a failure of imagination, it was a failure of policy. We had the information. It was an issue that the Clinton administration had policies in place that resulted in the failure to share information and the attacks. So it was that and information relating to our ability that we could have basically taken the terrorists out before 9/11. We actually had the capability to basically remove them from the United States before the attack, and we were not permitted to do that. So those are the two primary points.
Yes, and of course now I do remember all that, but I just forgotten that you were involved in that. And let me, this is kind of a bad way to end, but Jamie Gorelick now is advising Jared Kushner. Jamie Gorelick, the one that caused all those bad things to happen right after 9/11.
Correct. And we're trying to figure that out ourselves. We don't quite get that. I was talking to one of the other former Clinton attorneys who's turned to our side about that, and he doesn't get it. He doesn't get it because he said himself, and he worked with Gorelick, that Gorelick is really evil. There's no other way to put it. So,
well, we have our hands full, and so this is the kind of thing that gets discouraging, Tony, but I always say, at least Mrs. Clinton is not president. Now, we just have to keep fighting. The battle is not over. We are still in the thick of this. And we've got all kinds of infiltrators, but we've got good people like this whistleblower. So the good men have to be prayed for and supported, and you're one of those good men. So,
Thank you.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, and by the way, his book, Operation Dark Heart, a great read, and so I recommend it. Now you know who he is, and you've heard his voice, so... Tony, thanks for joining us today. Thank you, and God bless and keep you.
All
right.
God bless you.
Okay, see you soon. All right, Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. New Zealander noted speaker Trevor Loudon received a standing ovation at an event hosted by ADA. Trevor Loudon brought the message loud and clear regarding defending America and American exceptionalism. If we hope to keep our freedom, Trevor stated, there are things we can do. Several times, Trevor urged us to use social media to join in the battle for public opinion. Tweet out truth, counter the deceitful narratives on Facebook, comment with the truth, and point out the fallacies for what they are. Encourage people, lastly, to let this administration and this 115th Congress know that we expect them to stand for faith, family, and freedom. Finally, if you weren't able to attend this event, you'll want to order the CD or DVD. Call 231-924-4050, 231-924-4050. This is a Decency Minute. Find us at AmericanDecency.org. I'm Bill Johnson.
Hello, I'm Gary Roby, host of Call to Worship, heard each Sunday on American Family Radio. This one-hour program will lead you in a special time of worship and praise. We will focus on God's Word, spoken, and in music. Call to Worship has a different topic each week as we glorify God together. Be sure to join us at 5 a.m. Central each Sunday for a Call to Worship right here on American Family Radio.
Consider serving with Friendships. It's an all-volunteer ministry providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished here at home and around the world. We're now taking applications. If you're available to serve without pay, you can be part of the crew reaching out to help people in need. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
American Family Radio, equipping you to change the culture.
AFR has been a tremendous positive influence for us. I've been searching to find something that would give me actual facts and statistics, information about the things that are going on in our world from a Christian perspective, and AFR just fit that niche perfectly. Abraham Hamilton, absolutely love. And I've been telling everyone I know that you need to turn off your TV and listen to AFR and get facts to know how to apply to our daily lives. I just wanted to let y'all know that. I know that Satan's bombarding everyone with negativism. It's not going to do any good, but you are making a positive impact. So thank you for every effort. Thank you for your programming. I listen to it all day long.
Your partnership makes a difference. Join us for our three-day share-a-thon starting April 4th. American Family Radio, boldly standing for truth for your family.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Official Washington is consumed these days with rumors of untoward Russian influence. So far, however, it has all but ignored an ominous reality. The Kremlin is poised to secure control over key parts of the U.S. energy sector. Specifically, Vladimir Putin's state-owned oil conglomerate Rosneft has exploited the dire economic circumstances of its bankrupt Venezuelan counterpart, PDVSA. As a result, Moscow may soon acquire many, if not actually all, of the assets of Citgo, until now a PDVSA subsidiary. Citgo's three critical American oil refineries and pipelines could enable Russia to manipulate or disrupt U.S. energy flows. A House subcommittee is holding a hearing today entitled Venezuela's Tragic Meltdown. Congress must begin assessing whether one of the repercussions of that disaster for Latin America will be a yawning strategic vulnerability for the United States. This is Frank Affney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Remember our mission statement. We talk about the countless number of families who feel like this town has forgotten them.
I got the opinion that there's some members of the Freedom Caucus, they'd vote no against the Ten Commandments if it came up for a vote.
I don't think we've seen the end of health care. The further along we go, where premiums continue to go up, more and more people will be drawn into this discussion.
Next up, we're going to get back to the president's three-part agenda. Jobs, jobs, and jobs.
You need 60 votes in the Senate to do anything, including a bathroom break. I would recommend they pivot to infrastructure now.
All right. Well, there's a lot of speculation about what would happen now. Mo Brooks has filed a bill to repeal Obamacare. Mo from Alabama. It's just a one-sentence bill. It says basically the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act is repealed, and the provisions of the law amended or repealed by such act are restored or revived as if such act had not been enacted. So he's put that forward. I don't think he has any other sponsors. Don't ask me to explain that. I can't, but I'll find out. Meanwhile, the House Freedom Caucus, of course, is getting blamed by Reince Priebus by others. And I told you early, in an earlier segment, there were 100, at least 100 Republican congressmen who were not going to vote for this bill. So it's a total sham to just blame the Freedom Caucus. But could I just say thank God for the Freedom Caucus? They are the ones who resisted when Paul Ryan kept saying, no, we're getting the votes, we're going to pass, this is great, it's going to be good, it's going to be wonderful. And it was not good, and it was not wonderful. That was not true. So last Sunday, on Fox News Sunday, Chris Wallace, who holds conservatives with considerable disdain, after he talked to Reince Priebus, and Reince blamed the Freedom Caucus and said they were not, you know, loyal to Donald Trump and that they had failed to defund Planned Parenthood, et cetera, et cetera. Chris turned his sarcasm on Jim Jordan. I thought Jim did a good job, and I want you to hear it. Let's listen.
House Republicans had more than enough members to pass the Obamacare repeal and replace bill, but once again, the House Freedom Caucus of hardline conservatives bucked its leaders, in this case, President Trump and Speaker Ryan, to block a major GOP initiative. Joining me now, Congressman Jim Jordan of Ohio, a founding member of the group. Congressman, welcome back to Fox News Sunday.
Good to be with you.
So Paul Ryan and Nancy Pelosi agreed on one thing Friday. Both said, here is the bottom line on the defeat of Obamacare repeal and replace. Here it is.
Obamacare is the law of the land. It's going to remain the law of the land until it's replaced. We did not have quite the votes to replace this law. Yeah, we're going to be living with Obamacare for the foreseeable future.
This is pretty exciting for us. Yesterday, our anniversary. Today, a victory for the Affordable Care Act, more importantly, for the American people.
We'll be living with Obamacare for the foreseeable future. Isn't that on you and your fellow members of the Freedom Caucus?
Chris, in the last segment, I think you blamed the Freedom Caucus, or people blamed the Freedom Caucus, the Heritage Foundation, the Club for Growth.
You blamed the
Speaker of the House, and even people are blaming the very guest you had on before, Reince Priebus. Instead of doing the blame game, let's get to work. Let's do the responsible thing. Let's get back to work and do what we told the voters we were going to do. Remember this bill? 17% of the country approved this bill. Maybe the fact that we opposed it, we did the country a favor because this bill didn't repeal Obamacare. This bill didn't do what we told the American people we were going to do. So let's be responsible. Let's get back to work and do what we told the American people we were going to accomplish, which is repeal Obamacare and replace it with a patient-centered health care program.
And here's the concern of the president and Ryan and a number of other people. There were a number of conservative provisions in this bill. And I want to put some of them up on the screen. Here's just a few. First major reform of Medicaid ever. Repeal individual and employer mandates. Mm-hmm. Defund Planned Parenthood, now in large part due to the opposition of you and other members of the Freedom Caucus. All of that goes away.
But you're forgetting the overall legislation. Even did the bill repeal Obamacare? No. Even Krauthammer said it didn't. It was Obama. He called it Obamacare light, not me. So it didn't repeal Obamacare. Did it bring down premiums? No. Even the CBO said premiums are going to continue to rise for the foreseeable future, for at least 3 years.
And then it goes down.
Yeah. And did it unite the Republican Party? Of course it didn't. We saw every major conservative organization in the country oppose this. You saw conservatives and, frankly, moderates in the House and Senate oppose this legislation. So it didn't unite our party. So why didn't we just do, you know, there's been talk about moving the goalposts. You know when the goalposts were moved? When they didn't start with the legislation we all voted for 15 months ago. The same bill I introduced 2 weeks ago, which said let's do clean repeal in one piece of legislation. And then let's do a separate piece of legislation to replace Obamacare with patient-centered health care.
Well, at least that's part of what Jim Jordan had to say. He did a great job acquitting himself. And, of course, we need to pray for those guys. I'm sorry, I'm very partisan, not about being Republican and Democrat, but about people that want to do what's right. I'm all in for them. And so I'm all in for the Freedom Caucus, and we need to pray for them. All right, so this is Sandy Rios. I will be back. I'm actually going to be, I have an interesting meeting tomorrow, and I'll tell you about it maybe Thursday morning. Fred Jackson will be in for me in the morning, but it's a pleasure to be back at the mic, and I'll see you really soon. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.